Most of us have probably remember seeing the news recently about an 8-alarm fire that occurred in downtown Jacksonville to a building that was over 100 years old. The next day after that fire was extinguished, photographs of that building showed only four walls, and everything else about that building was totally demolished. It wasn't very long after that it was declared a safety hazard, and they came in, destroyed the building, and it became a pile of rubble. That to me was sad to think about. 100-year-old building, and all of the joy and pride and various things that had gone on in that building over 100-year period was gone away, and now it was left a pile of rubble. But you know, burnout occurs in buildings we're familiar with. But I want to speak to you today about another kind of burnout. It's a burnout that occurs in the lives of Christians and other people. Burnout occurs in the business world when executives become exhausted and after years of stress and strain and they have to retire. Burnout occurs with teachers in classrooms who started out their careers excited and enthusiastic and wanting to be with children. And after a while, they turn critical, negative, and uncaring. And we have recently learned from the burnout that burnout can occur in students that are isolated by computer learning at home. Burnout occurs in dedicated Christians, sad to say. They begin their Christian life full of energy and enthusiasm. They are ready to take on the world. They're ready to take on any task that might be available. They're eager to learn about the law of Christ. They're also present for every worship service. And don't miss a one. And then after a while, they become burned out. What a sad sight to see. The problem is not new, though. That problem has been around for a long time. In fact, the Bible tells us in Hebrews, the 10th chapter, verse 32, the writer says, "But call to remembrance the former days in which, after ye were illuminated, ye endured a great fight of affliction. Or ye had compassion on me in my bonds, and took joyfully the spoiling of your goods, knowing also yourselves that ye have in heaven a better and an enduring substance." Notice what the writer was saying. Four things. Number one, he was saying, remember the past. Remember the past. Secondly, remember the past after you were illuminated, after you were converted. Remember the past after you were converted, how you endured a great fight of afflictions. And then fourth, how you took joyfully the spoiling of your goods. There apparently was a reason that he would warn them and urge them to remember the past. Remember back when you were first converted and became a Christian. Remember how you were willing to do anything. You endured a great fight of affliction. And not only that, you endured the taking of your spoils, of your goods and so on, and you took that joyfully. But that was back then. That was back when they were first illuminated. In fact, some may hear that and read that and say, well, those were the good old days. And certainly they were. But when they first became Christians, they had that great burning fire, and it was not burned out. Public hostility was high at the time that we're talking about. The persecution of Christians was great. Christians were, the cost of being a Christian was a great price to pay. And yet they were willing to pay the price, any price, even death, because of the hope that they had in their newfound faith. Everything about these new Christians was exciting at the beginning when they were first converted. The story of Jesus they told over and over again, and the gathering together for worship service where they sang, prayed, and studied together and encouraged one another had a special meaning back then. It meant so much to them that they would risk everything to be present every meeting of their brethren. They were willing to meet in caves and caverns with a risk of death if they were discovered. But they were willing to do so, risking those things to be present in worship. But those were the former days. Those were back in the days when they were first converted, when they were excited about Christianity. But go back in that same chapter, just a few verses, seven verses, to verse 25. And it says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more, as you see the day approaching. Do you get the message? Here he is in the beginning of that chapter saying how great it was. Remember the former days. And then seven verses later, that there are some who are forsaking the assembling of themselves together. See, apparently what had happened. There were some who were suffering from burnout. There were some who were forsaking the assembly. They were giving up, so to speak, that faith that they had once had. Some of these readers were not attending worship. Others were considering dropping out. What a sad state of affairs. I wonder, as I think about our world today, if perhaps some of the same things are reoccurring again. As I talk to brethren in different places about the virus and the effect that it's had on the church and on members of the church, they are concerned and we are concerned as to what is happening as a result of the circumstances that are around us. We must be careful, brethren, that we do not allow these circumstances to cause us to suffer burnout and to give up and to quit. In Hebrews, the 12th chapter, there in verse 12, he says, wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. He says, don't give up. And it's interesting that he says here, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. He's describing a group of people that were ready to give up. They were just down. They were disappointed. They were in distress and ready to give up. He describes them as having drooping hands and weak knees. Christianity to some of them had turned out to be something other than a constant joy and exciting. They were done in. Many of them. The Bible does not ignore the fact that enthusiasm can wane in every good cause. We can't be certain of what the causes were in that first century to those who were down and out and ready to give up. But I think there's a couple of things that we could say that are reasonable that could have suggested why they were willing to give up. The first instance, perhaps, is the fact the thrill had gone out of hearing the message that they had heard in the beginning. All of us are in danger, I think, of losing our sense of wonder if we are constantly exposed to something that is beautiful. In fact, in your own life, how many times have you been down to the beach to see the beautiful scene that's there? I must admit, we've been here a long time, and it's been a long time since I've been back to the beach. We tend to lose our wonder at the things that we see and experience in common. I often wondered about the people who live up in the Great Smoky Mountains, how they must feel about the mountain scenes. I'm sure that they feel a lot better about them than we do, or not a lot better, but they accept them as common more than we do when we go up there to visit. And we see those beautiful scenes in those beautiful mountains. Perhaps it was that these people that the Hebrew writer is talking about had lost the thrill of hearing that message over and over again. I think we at Oceanside are blessed with sermons and Bible study and scriptural teachings that are challenging to us every time. And yet, our enthusiasm can fall. It can become old hat. It can become just what we expected to happen to us. In Revelations 2:1-5, the writer John there talks about the church at Ephesus. And he writes to them these words, "Remember, therefore, from whence thou art fallen." Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Here was a church in the city of Ephesus, and they are now reminded to remember back to a certain time before from which they had fallen. And repent, and do the first works, or else I will come unto thee quickly, and I will remove thy candlestick out of its place, except ye repent. Burnout can happen in every good cause. And so it is that we need to watch very carefully that we not allow it into our lives. It occurs when we begin to lose our capacity to dream and to think of things that we might do. In Proverbs, the 29th chapter, verse 18, the writer says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keepeth the law, happy is he." That's why we have days in which we try to think about and dream about things that we can do and we must do if we are to survive. So it could very well have been that these people who burned out had lost their capacity to dream and to vision about things that need to be done and could be done in the Word of the Lord. But secondly, some of the early Christians, the years were passing and they saw nothing happening. You stop and think for a moment. They anticipated the Lord's return to be very soon. And they expected that. And they had paid the price. And now they wondered if it was really worth it. In fact, in 2 Peter, the 3rd chapter, verse 3, the writer says, "Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation." If you stop and think about it, burnout occurs when we feel that we're spinning our wheels. to put it very bluntly. Day after day, year after year, we work and it seems we have no impact on the lives of others, and we think our dreams have exceeded our capacity. There were those who thought, Jesus is coming back soon. And they worked diligently, but times passed. And they began to think, maybe this is not what it should be. Maybe not what it really is. As we think about new Christians, very often in our lives we set out to convert the world. After all, Jesus said, go ye into all the world. But eventually we begin to look around. And we anticipate things that just don't occur. And we begin to feel as if we're just spinning our wheels. Brethren, we must guard against such thinking. In fact, I think the best example of that would be Noah. Noah preached for 120 years. Converted a multitude? No. Converted seven people. Brethren, we're not spinning our wheels. We must not become disappointed in our work. The letter to the Hebrews, however, is not the only book that describes discouragement and disappointment. Israel, if you remember, had been defeated. The capital city and the temple there had been destroyed. They were in captivity hundreds of miles away from home. And Ezekiel, the prophet, looked out on a valley of dry bones. And in discouragement, he asked God, can these bones live? You know the answer that came back? God says, yes, they can live. And I will put sinews on them, and I will put flesh on them, and they will live. It had not all been for naught in the life of Ezekiel. The prophet Elijah, you recall, fell into deep despair just after one of his greatest victories. He had defeated, with God's help, 450 prophets of Baal. I'm sure that after that happened, he had the idea, well, at least we've done away with idolatry. But that didn't happen. In fact, the Bible tells us that in 1 Kings 19, verse 4, that he fled for his life from Jezebel. He fled into the wilderness, and there he asked God, take my life. It's to no avail. Take my life. There in that despair, God said to him, what are you doing here? And he answered to him, I'm the only one left. All the others are gone. They're no one else. And God says, oh no, you're wrong. You're mistaken. There are 700 who are left and have not bowed the knees to Baal. The next part of that conversation, I think, is the most important of all. God said to him, you need to get busy. You need to get back to work. What are you doing here in this cave in a wilderness place? You need to be busy in the work. In fact, even in the life of Christ, crowds were turned away from following Jesus. And in John, the 6th chapter, verse 67, he turned to the apostles and he asked the question, will you also go away? How sad the sight. In John, the 21st chapter, verse 3, it also records that after the crucifixion, Peter said to some of the disciples, guess what? I'm going fishing. It's over. It's over. Christ died. He's gone back to heaven. I'm going fishing. And the sad part about it was that some of the other apostles said, I go with you. What's the use anymore? There was the idea of discouragement and distress that happened there. When the first generation of Christians came to a close, Rome had destroyed the birthplace of Christianity. They had crucified the Son of God. They had persecuted and murdered his followers. And there were those who gave up in despair, thinking that their efforts were lost and of no value, that it was a lost cause. But you just stop and think, brethren. Here we are, 2,000 years later. The loss that they had was not lost at all. In fact, it remained. And as Mike pointed out in the prophecies, that it would be a kingdom that would last forever. It would never be destroyed. And so it is, 2,000 years later, here we are as a result of the work that they had done. But I guess the basic question that we ought to be thinking about this morning is, how do we keep going when discouragement and burnout threaten us on every hand? And I suppose if there ever was a time in our lives, now is the time that all kinds of trials and temptations and troubles are about us, from the virus up to you know what. And so it is that we need to know how do we overcome these feelings of discouragement and spinning our wheels and not having an impact? How do we overcome that? The Hebrew writer gives us the answer. In Hebrews, the 10th chapter, verse 23, he said, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, but be faithful he that is faithful that promised, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good work, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. What is the answer? The answer is to draw strength from other Christians. Brethren, that's exactly what some of the programs that we ask you to participate in are doing right now. The Reach Out program is to see people who are shut in. Some of them are down in the dumps, if you want to think of it that way. They need a fellow Christian to come and call and say, we miss you. Can we help you? Is there anything that we can do for you? And encourage them in the Christian life. We need to draw strength from other Christians. And brethren, that is the exact purpose of our worship to God, that in doing so in the assembly together, we draw courage and energy from those other Christians who are with us. We tell the story today because some did remain faithful in their attendance, even when they were plagued with fear and doubt, discouragement and despair. I don't know about you, but we need to count it as a blessing that all of them did not give up, that all of them did not forsake the assembly, that all of them began to learn how to overcome that disappointment and discouragement. This is the challenge that you and I face today, who have been Christians for a long, long time. We hear the story over and over, but each time we need to hear it like we did the first time, when we were first illuminated, when we were first converted. The last prescription that God gave for burnout and discouragement and disappointment is get back to work. You remember that when he talked to the prophet. He said, what are you doing here in this cavern or in this cave? You need to get back to work. And he said to him, exactly, you go back and you appoint new kings in Judah and Israel. You return to your duties as a prophet. And it's true today that we will only be renewed when we become involved in another good work. The idea that, well, we've tried this and we've tried that and that didn't work and all of this, so on. We must set our sights on new heights and move to those higher grounds. Those early Christians stayed close together. They loved and they appreciated each other. They recalled the excitement of the beginning of their faith and the rewards that they received from each other. In Revelation 2 and verse 20, is that solemn admonition and challenge. Be thou faithful unto death. We could not, should not kid ourselves in thinking that that's an easy task. With all that's going on about us and all the things that we see that are straining at our faith, being faithful unto death is a difficult task. But with God's help, we can make it. We must not. We cannot begin to look around and say, well, you know, it seems like we're just spinning our wheels here in this place. We plead with you this morning, don't give up. This too shall pass. A wise philosopher, Thomas Paine, said in 1776, during the crisis in America, that these are the times that try men's soul. Of course, he was talking about the revolution, but I'm persuaded that those words could be spoken again about our time, 2020 and 2021. These are the times that try men's soul. These are the times that are going to prove those who are faithful, who will not forsake the assembly, who will not deny their Lord, who will be faithful despite what the cost may be. I hope that I've given you an idea as to a danger that I see developing in churches across the country and perhaps even here in our own Oceanside. We must not become complacent. We must not forget the excitement that we had back when we were illuminated, when we were converted. I wonder if you're here this morning and you're not a Christian. Where do you stand? Do you really appreciate those that have gone before us and left us the word that we believe and we practice even today? If you're not a Christian, you ought to be. You need to come believing in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, repenting of your sin, changing that old life, confessing that faith before this audience and anyone that comes in, you come in contact with, and being buried with them in baptism. But also, you may be here and you're a Christian. You've been a Christian for 20 years, 30 years, 50 years. And maybe some of the luster has lost in your life. I want you today recommit your life to Christ and remember those former days and the excitement that was generated in your life at the day of your conversion. If you need to come, won't you do it now? As together we stand and sing.